We asked Ron Van Dam to tell us what he knows about his listeners.
They're not pretty, and they make a lot of noise when they're mating.
I'm a little concerned as to how you know that. Probably best not to think about it. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program. It is indeed the Ron Van Dam Show. I am the person to whom they refer to in the title of the show. So strap yourself in, or strap yourself in even more. We have a wonderful show for you today. It's the Friday weekend edition of the program. Ooh, special. Can I offer you anything? I think in order to listen to the show, you have to have an alcoholic beverage. Not that it's really required or a great idea, but I guarantee you it will make the show that much more plausible. All right. Okay. That's enough. That'll be enough. Do you know they're predicting snow in Montana this weekend? And yet temperatures will be 95 in Canada? What the hell's going on? That'll be enough background theme music. That'll be enough. Hey, let me introduce some of the people that make this show possible. Well, first there's me. And then there's you. And then there's Jason Shaw, who performs and writes the background music on this show for the most part, including the theme, the opening theme. John Shanahan, the incredible John Shanahan. He's an incredible magician, by the way. He can make doves disappear in a cage. Yeah, it's one of his magic acts. He's a comedian. He's a writer. And a lot of the funny stuff you hear on the program is his property. And then there's Nicole Reed, who books many of the national interviews that you hear on this program, because apparently I'm not capable of doing that myself, or I just don't have the damn time. And she is also the British voice that you hear at the beginning of the program in the introduction. Okay, that's just some of the people behind the scenes. There's another 3,000 people in our graphic arts and animation department. okay. Anyway, how you doing? Good to be with you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for being here. We're coming up on the last week of May. Ooh, here's the funny part, which isn't that funny. It's actually the whole show. Here's the funny part that's actually not that funny. Time is moving really fast. Have you noticed? Is it just me? Well, the answer to that is usually yes. Is it just me, or during the pandemic, time seemed to go even faster when you couldn't do anything? Isn't it supposed to go faster when you're like really busy and you don't have a moment to yourself? You're just running all over the place and doing things, and you look at your watch, which no one really wears anymore. You look at the clock and you go, whoa, it's that late already. Whew, I must have been busy. That's when time flies, quote unquote. but it's not supposed to go quickly when there's nothing going on. That's weird. There's something wrong going on here. Maybe it's all the alien spacecraft that's invading our airspace that's making time go so quickly. I don't understand it. Oh, I'm sorry. My eyes are itching today. I have, Jesus Christ. I've got allergies up the ass, which is a very strange place to sneeze. I think farting is like, is sneezing through your ass, isn't it? Is this show appropriate for children, by the way? I don't think it's appropriate for adults. A lot of people say to me, Ron, why do you do a show like this? I had a part of my life, I was a stand-up comedian. All comedians stand up, by the way. You've never heard of the term a sit-down comedian. Oh, he's funny. He's the funniest sit-down comedian I've ever seen. No, they're all like standing up for some reason. And I think because if the act goes bad, they can get out very quickly. I don't know why. He's going to do some stand-up. He's going to stand up. Ron, what do you do? Oh, I do stand-up. You stand up? Yes. They pay me just to stand up. I'm sitting down so much that I decided to, in my spare time, to stand up. Wow, that's incredible. I used to like doing stand-up, no matter how bad the act may be. When you walk out, they applaud immediately before you've even said anything. I think they're applauding the fact that you're standing up. And then as the act goes on, not so much. it peaks when it starts, and by the end of your act, it's like, oh, get off the stage already. My God, stop standing up, sit down. Yeah, but it's great. They introduce your name, and people just start applauding for no reason whatsoever. It's fantastic. Thank you. Thank you, by the way. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. That's the way the act starts, and about 3 minutes into the act, very different. Very different. Yeah, it's odd. It's an interesting industry. It's very different than the auto industry. Anyway, yeah, allergies have been. There are so many different types of allergies that they've come up with. You can be allergic to millions of things. It's surprising that we're even able to breathe anymore. I think right now the maple and pine sounds like a bad law firm. The maple and the pine are, and then there's the ragweed. I don't even know what that is. I have no idea what ragweed is. I don't know what this stuff looks like, but I know it makes me sneeze, and my eyes water. I'm watery in my eyes. I have a lot of moisture and liquid in my eyes. And then there's the pollen. Is that general, or is general pollen, sir, reporting for duty? I remember last year, one morning, I went out to my car, and my car was covered in green pollen, which is weird because I have a black car, but it was green when I came out in the morning. I was like, whoa, someone brought my car down to Mako and had it painted green. No, that's just the pollen. And I thought, oh my God, if my car is covered in pollen, the hell's going to go off? What's going to happen to me? If I walk outside, will I be covered in pollen? It's odd. Isn't it odd? Here's a new thing that I was not aware of when I was younger or before the turn of the century. Isn't it odd that a lot of us were here for the turn of the century? It sounds like we lived in castles and there was knighthood and dragons and stuff. Yes, I was around at the turn of the century. Yes, I was. We beheaded people if we didn't like them. It was at the turn of the century. It wasn't that long ago. It was like 20 years ago or 21. I don't know. Math was never my greatest subject. I was around for the turn of the century. It turned. Yeah, I was around for that. But here's what they've come up with. Their gender reveals. What the hell? What the hell is that? I guess if a woman is having a baby, and those are the people that usually do have them. If a woman is having a baby, but she doesn't want to know if she's going to have a boy or a girl, it's inside her body growing like crazy, but you don't know what it is. So they have a gender reveal, and something will turn pink or blue, and then you're like surprised. But you never hear the woman, you're going to have a boy. Oh shit! They don't say that. They seem to be happy with whatever they get. I can't relate to that. I'm never happy with just what I get. My reaction would be what I just said. It's going to be a boy? Oh, damn it. All that work, and I got to have another boy. Yeah, they never seem to be, like, disappointed or anything. I wonder if they really are. And sometimes the gender reveals will be, like, explosively amazing. Like, they'll blew fireworks, something like that. They go out of their way. Let me tell you something. All you have to do is just walk up to her and say, hey, you're going to have a boy. That's the way it used to be. But now we have to make it a whole entertainment evening. It has to be a planned party with all the relatives and the in-laws. And oh, I wonder what it's going to be. Stop it. Just stop it. Cut it out. Just stop it. I have a friend, Tori Lagarde, did the show with me for a couple of years, quite a number of years, and she was always talking about going on a Stop It tour, where she would stand up. She'd stand on a stage in front of hundreds of people who would pay large amounts of money to see her speak. And she would get up on the stage and say, do you have a problem drinking, with drugs? Are people abusing you? Do you find that life isn't going the way you want it to be? And she would just say, well, just stop it. Just stop it. Cut it out. Stop it. And I thought, well, this is a wonderful idea for a tour. The Stop It Tour. First lady was doing the say no to drugs. I think it was one of the Bush ladies. Ooh, that didn't sound right, did it? Just say no to drugs. Simple. It's just all these people with these drug habits, what's your problem? Just say no. What's your problem? What's the deal with you? Just say no. If somebody's coming at you and is about to sexually assault you, just say no, 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 no. It's as simple as that. Simple as that. That was the conjecture. It was just a very simple thing. Very simple thing. Are you being abused by somebody? Just say no. Just say no. No. That's all. Very simple. Very simple. Not a big deal. Anyway. Welcome to the program. I do have an interesting guest coming up momentarily. I had heard on the news a few days ago that the International Space Station, the ISS, was going to pass over my house. And I thought, well, I hope they don't release the poop at that moment. And I ran outside, and I see this little white dot going across the sky in a nice clip. And I was amazed that we have things in orbit. And then I thought to myself, wait a second. Isn't Russia the place that's spying on us? causing all kinds of havoc and trying to screw up our election system and trying to destroy our country and our social standing in the world and invading other countries. Well, yeah, Ron, why are we sharing a space station with them? That's kind of, it's kind of their space station. Interesting. It's like a love-hate relationship. I hate them, but I love them. They must have done the space station thing together when after they had a few drinks, you know. Do you ever realize that? See, I don't understand why Congress doesn't do this. You know, we're more divided than ever, Republicans and Democrats. It's because they're not drinking alcohol together. After a few drinks, everything's fine. You can come up with some great resolves after a few drinks, such as a Just Say No program. I mean, that concept was probably over a few drinks. Where Barbara Bush or Sadie Bush or whatever, one of the Bush girls, I really don't know which one, and I don't even know if it was a Bush person from the backcountry. I have no idea. But they must have just sat down at a bar and said, I don't know, I'm going to go around the country and tell people just to say no. That's a great idea. Do you want another drink? Yeah, that's just good. We're solving problems left and right here. Must have been something like that. Must have been. There's just no other explanation for that. Yeah, I mean, alcohol, you got to be careful. I mean, it's a big problem for a lot of people, but at the same time, it solves a lot of problems, you know. Yeah. Yeah, you have a few drinks, you agree on things, but you have to sign papers, because otherwise in the morning you'd say, hey, I said last night, I was drunk, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. Oh, but you signed the papers. Oh, crap. All right. By the way, am I having a boy or a girl? A girl. Oh, no. That's your reveal. All right, my guest joins us momentarily. This is the Friday weekend edition of the program, which means it doesn't really count. it's not real. It's just, don't hold this one against me is pretty much what I'm saying. Hey, you know, a lot of people now are, this is a good deal. You know, you can go out to restaurants again because the restrictions are being lifted all over the places. Wow. So go to restaurants. Have a good time.
Hey, this is Bobby Marone, former heavyweight contender. But I hung up my boxing gloves to open the area's favorite new restaurant.
It's Headshots, Bobby.
Headshots. Hey, this month we're starting something new at Headshots. It's our all-you-can-eat nothing but meatball brunch. That's right. You can come to Headshots and load up on all your favorite sausage.
Meatball?
Right. Meatballs. It doesn't matter what kind of chicken you like.
Meatball?
What kind of meatball you like. We got it at the all-you-can-eat nothing but typewriters.
Meatballs.
Nothing but meatball buffet. You heard me right. No pasta. No cacciatore, no lasagna, just delicious lasagna.
Meatballs.
Meatballs. However you like them. Traditional, hot and spicy, stuffed with cheese, covered in marinara. My mouth is watering just thinking about eating all these cheerleaders.
Holy meatballs.
Eating all these meatballs myself. So what are you waiting for? Get on down to Headshots and see if you can eat more General Gao's chicken than me, Bobby Marone. That last one was supposed to be meatballs too, huh?
Yeah.
Smiley's here. He's the author of Friendship in the Age of Loneliness, an Optimist's Guide to Connection. Boy, do we need this book. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
When did you start penning this this thing here?
I actually started it long before the pandemic in 2017.
Wow.
So yeah, it was lucky timing in terms of how timely it is and how important it is right now. But I actually started writing it several years ago after the death of one of my best friends.
Wow. May I ask your general age category?
Yeah, I'm 37 years old.
Okay. Yeah, usually a little bit later in life, you start to go through that that loss in various relationships. Gets a little freaky sometimes, and loneliness is a good word for that. That's just one phase of it, though. But the things that are familiar start to fade away from your grasp all of a sudden.
Yeah, I think as we get older, you know, it's a lot easier to make friends when we're kids, right?
Yeah.
You know, we grow up, we're told that we play, you know, it's recess, you're supposed to go make friends, everyone's supposed to be friends. In high school you have friends, maybe college you have friends, and then as you get older, people move away, they get married, they have kids.
Yes.
It's much harder to stay in touch, and it's much harder to kind of forge those real relationships, especially for men. You know, this is a big problem when it comes to male friendships.
True. That's very interesting. I think that's the case because men don't tend to, I'm not being sexist or anything, but men don't tend to translate their emotions back and forth and to discuss things. So that's lonely in itself because everything that's going on, you got to deal with it on your own, even if there's another guy in the room with you.
That's right.
It's a horrible stigma. Yeah. And women, you know, different.
Yeah, I mean, there's the saying that, you know, women talk face to face, men talk shoulder to shoulder, right? Men talk when they're watching a game, when they're, you know, at an activity, when they're watching sports, when they're having a beer, which makes it a lot harder to open up and be vulnerable and get that emotional connection. When we know that when, you know, in order to have real friendship, you need vulnerability, you need emotional connection, you need to be in touch with your feelings.
Yeah. Men are so stupid. Anyway, I'm talking about myself. All right. Let's go to the elephant in the room, the COVID situation, what I call the big global social experiment. That's kind of what it was. We found out what it's like in this long generation to survive mentally, and a lot of us made it. Some of us didn't, and some of us are still going through it and may continue. What's your experience with that? That indeed changed things, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, I think the pandemic has really exposed just how serious of a mental health crisis we have in this country. I think we had many of these issues bubbling up prior to COVID, but it exposed, you know, basically what happens when people don't have social connection and when people, you know, how fragile these relationships are. We're seeing skyrocketing rates of anxiety, depression, especially among young people.
Mm-hmm.
And then working parents, I think, are the categories where loneliness levels are up the most. And especially for people that don't have social support built in, or maybe live with family or live with friends or live close to friends.
Yeah.
In this last year and a half, it's been really hard for folks. And I think that's one of the reasons why so many people are interested in this book. People miss their friends before they spent a year not being able to see them.
Yeah.
So what happens when you can't even get together with folks, when you can't, you know, go to the bar, when you can't go to an event, when you can't meet up on Friday night or have a dinner party, and we have to do so much of this virtually? It's just not the same. Yeah.
Smiley, I have a question for you. When this all subsides, which could be later in the summer, certainly by the fall, do you think that people will appreciate spending time with other people as a result? Like, oh, you know, time is precious. My God, I've got to spend more time with my friends and my family. Or do you think people will say, the social distancing, I've kind of gotten used to that to some extent. I'm not going to have people on top of me all the time. I'll be aware they're there, but I did survive it. I didn't get sick, etc. Which way do you think it's going to go?
I think it's the former. I think we're going to emerge from this realizing, at least my hope is, and you know, I'm an optimist.
Right.
That's my title.
That's your thing.
Right. But I believe that we're going to emerge from this realizing just how lucky we are, how precious it is to be able to congregate in public, to see live music, to sit inside a restaurant, to visit family, you know, to not have to check with people about whether they've been tested or whether they're sick, to hug people, to hug a stranger, to go up to someone on the street and just start having a conversation. I believe that we're going to emerge from this more open, more communicative, more excited to spend time with each other. And I think that that actually might be one silver lining from what has been a pretty miserable year all around.
Yeah, it's. I agree with you. And I think the economy is going to boom, and I think everything is going to be pretty cool socially.
Agreed.
Politically, I'm not sure, but socially, it's going to be fine. yeah. We still have to recover from the previous disaster, as I call it. I agree with you. I think people will sit back and go, "My God, I missed this," and they'll start holding on to it. What do you say to people that are pessimists or that, and I won't use that term in general, but people who are still lonely and a little bit scared to get together and a little bit more questioning somebody else? And what advice do you have for people?
I really say start slow. I would say first and foremost, I feel you. I hear you. It's been a long year.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of questions about, you know, safety and not knowing kind of, you know, where this pandemic is headed and all the variants. So I understand people's apprehension. I understand people that want to take it easy, ease back into social life. And I think that that's a big thing actually about friendship is meeting your friends where they are.
Yeah.
So my advice to people that are confronting that within their social circles is to meet those people where they are, ask them what they need, ask them how they're doing. And if people want to take a little bit more time or not get together in large groups, great, that's fine. That's their right, and try to understand that. And you can still reach out to them. You can still give them a call on the phone. You can still do something socially distant. You can still write them a letter. You can still hang out virtually. So just let's realize that everyone's at a different place right now. The pandemic has been different for everyone in terms of how it's affected people and their personal lives and their families. I think this is a time for kind of compassion and understanding and meeting people where they are. So I would say, understand, take your time. Everyone is going to reemerge. I call it kind of the great friendship awakening. That's going to happen at different times and at different rates for different people. And that's okay. You know, also the situation with the pandemic and local economies and businesses is different in, you know, where I live in California versus Boston versus, you know, rural Texas versus Kansas City. And that's okay. And that's just how it's going to be. And this is going to be a little bit, you know, I actually think that this next phase might even be harder. I mean, I think it's going to be more exciting and things are opening up, but emotionally in terms of friendships, it's actually be hard because people are not at the same place. You know, when lockdown first happened and quarantine first happened, you know, there was some data showing out that actually people felt less lonely, you know, last spring, March and April, because we were all kind of going through it together. You know, we're all kind of in this together. We all pretty much have similar situations, but now it's very different. Some people are pretty much full on going to concerts and shows and going to dance parties and baseball games. And that's great. And some people are still stuck at home and it really depends. So
Smiley, isn't it like more of a personality thing? I mean, to me, I know people that live alone by themselves. They're single. They haven't seen anybody in a while because they've been kind of stuck in their place by themselves. And they don't think twice about living alone. They're just fine with it. Other people, if you leave them alone for 10 minutes, they go crazy. I mean, like, I've always had somebody living with me. I've always had somebody hearing people walking around the house. I guess that's why dogs became so popular during the pandemic. It's because that kind of solved loneliness on a very basic level, I guess.
Right. And I think, you know, that what you're highlighting is that there's a difference between social isolation and loneliness, right? You can be socially isolated and not feel lonely. So social isolation is just having few connections, right? Or interactions. And some people prefer that. Maybe they want to live in a cabin in the woods, or they live in an apartment building, you know, in Boston, and, you know, they like to live alone. They don't want to see too many people. Cool. That's their choice. Loneliness is actually the subjective perception of isolation. So it's kind of the discrepancy, the difference between one's desired and actual level of connection. It's when you're like, oh my gosh, everyone else is having so much fun. They didn't invite me to the party, or I wish I had more social connections or invitations.
Yeah.
So people, you know, social isolation for some people is fine. For others, it can be incredibly unhealthy and lead to a lot of pretty bad health outcomes, as can loneliness. You know, there's evidence that chronic loneliness can, you know, be involved with inflammation, be a risk factor for heart disease and cancer, cardiovascular disease, stroke, Alzheimer's. Yeah. One study actually found that loneliness can be as much of a long-term risk factor as smoking. So, yeah.
Okay.
One review showed that loneliness actually increased the risk of dying by 25%.
Wow.
So this isn't, you know, this is pretty serious stuff. And I think it's kind of a call, you know, one of my goals of this book is kind of say, yes, friendship is something pretty simple, but it's life-changing. It's actually life-saving.
And it's all perception. I mean, in other words, those that are alone are perfectly happy with it. They can live forever probably without the stress, without the anxiety, and others, no. So, yeah, very interesting. I like the book because it's, first of all, the timing, which you did not plan for, obviously, is perfect, as you had mentioned. But also, it's something that most people feel at least from time to time, if not all the time. And people don't discuss this aspect of our social life. So it's good that you did this.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a social shame around it, especially for people. You know, I consider myself an extrovert. I'm pretty active socially. Uh-huh. But extroverts and socially active people can still feel lonely.
Oh, yeah. Right?
I think we need to talk about that more.
Oh, absolutely. I was brought up in New York, and when I was young and adult, we used to go out in couples like every Friday and Saturday night and spend all our time together. Got a little bit older. Everybody had their own families. They got married to somebody, started a family, a little more in the job. All of a sudden, all the friends I had through from school through young adulthood, they were just gone. They just had no time. Their lives went somewhere else, even though we were in the same city. And that happens to people, but they don't discuss that. But that does happen to almost everybody.
Right.
Interesting. Okay. The book is called Friendship in the Age of Loneliness, an optimist's Guide to Connection. Smiley is the optimist, by the way, playing the part of the optimist today. And how do people follow you?
Yeah, you can follow me at my website, smileypozwolski.com. I'm on Instagram at What's Up Smiley and Twitter at What's Up Smiley. You can buy the book wherever books are sold.
Well, that'll do it for me today. You have been wonderful. I'll be back again on Monday with a brand new show. Until that time arrives, take care of yourself. Be careful. I wish you peace.